WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan, Mego, Chime Time. And joining us right now on the phone, NBC Sports Boston's Tom E. Kern joins the program. Hello, Mr. Kern. How are we doing today?
Sounds like Run, Run, Rudolph right there.
Oh, yeah. Jacob's...
Run, Rudolph!
An inspired... selection back there today. Jacob, on the ones and twos, absolutely killing it back there today. Tom, how are we doing? How are you spending your bye week this week?
You know what? I played golf yesterday in the cold, and it wasn't as cold when I got out there, and it's actually a little warmer right now, and I think I'm going to go over again, and then the missus and I might go to the movies, but I don't think we're definitely going to. And then I'm going to watch football.
That sounds like, it sounds great. Freezing cold golf, little movie with the missus, and some football on Sunday. That sounds like the American dream right there. Tom, you had a very much ballyhooed conversation with Gerard Mayo this week. And in that, he said he believes that he'll be a better coach in year two. Why do you think he will or won't be a better coach in year two?
Oh, I think he will be. Will the results be better? We don't know. Hopefully so, because you just don't see like to see a team flounder like that, and they'll be playing a last-place schedule. But I think they'll be better. He will be better because he'll have a better comprehensive idea of what he wants from his team. And unfortunately, I think that there has been a seeping recognition of, hey, to invoke a golf term, this is a breakfast ball, okay? 2024, we're going to hit a drive here. We're not loose yet. Could go anywhere. If it goes south, I'm going to hit another one. And I think that that has been the mentality bestowed upon the year by the crafts. And I think Mayo has believed that as well. Now, there's a million reasons for it leading up to it, but that's where they are. And I think the lack of urgency at times has caused them to be less aggressive, more cautious, and they're just getting used to the water, which is no way to go through an NFL season, but here we are.
Tom, in talking to Gerard, when you talk about the maybe lack of sense of urgency, and that's something that he's vocalized during the week at practice, saying that he mm-hmm. wants there to be a sense of urgency with his team. Do you get the sense that originates with him, or is it other people on staff, or is it kind of just an organic thing that's born out of the situation of so many people learning on the job and trying to do the right thing, and then it turns out to be the safe thing?
No, I think it originates in the off season when they talked about this year is about laying a foundation. So that was with the Crafts, that was with Mayo, that was with Elliot Wolf, that was with the slow buildup of Drake May, which was to the good. That was with going through most of the season, still trying to figure out an offensive line grouping, choosing between players who weren't that great. That was in saying we're going to get our younger players more reps, the wide receivers, to find out what we have. So I think you get that seeping idea that it's not tryout time. The games count. Everybody's getting paid just as much as they would be if they were a contending team. But I think that has been, because of the circumstances the Crafts felt that they were confronting post-Bill and the decisions they made, this has been a building year, a foundational year, a mulligan year, whatever we want to call it. And it's really hard to watch because we haven't done that since 1993.
So, Tom,
and you weren't even alive.
I was a year old.
I was alive.
Tom, you have confidence in Gerard Mayo getting better next year. For the fans who don't, what can we hope to see in the next 4 weeks against a tough schedule that might give us at least some more hope that he is improving and getting ready for year two?
His in-game management and his decisiveness and the ability to decide, you know what, this is a position at which we want to have an identity that's hard and fast instead of trying to be a coach who I think this year is more malleable to the situation. And as a result, since you didn't have a personality as a team going into the year, other than we want to be tough, smart, and disciplined, you have to adopt a personality. And I've said this on this spot several times this year. I'm going to say it again. But Dan Campbell, I will be aggressive at every turn, put my put the pedal to the metal and go for it on fourth down. It's not the most intelligent thing in the world sometimes, but at least you know who you are and what you're supposed to be about. And the Patriots have this nebulous, we're going to be tough, smart, and disciplined. Awesome. Everybody wants to be that. What is it going to look like? It's not going to look like I'm going to lick my finger and put it in the air and decide to not go on fourth and one at somebody else's 40 based upon that. We just go. And I really think that that is the way to attack when you have a team that is built around one, which seems to be almost transcendent player in Drake May. So adopt the personality of that player and go with it. So I can't imagine, just to follow Shine, based on the question, the way you pose it, you can't imagine that he would be not improving going into year two, right? Like, who would think that he's going to be worse?
Well, so my issue is that I would hope that he's better in year two, but at the same time, I haven't seen, at least for me, I haven't seen any improvement from him this season. And so if I'm not seeing any improvement during the season at all, like, why am I to expect that there will be improvement in the offseason?
And if I could just jump in, he could lose the locker room next year, Ty. It could get worse than this. I mean, this isn't good, but it could get worse.
But I think it was based on what, well, why would Gerard Mayo be a worse coach? And I think that right now, I think the challenges that he's confronting are basically based around inexperience. So if you gain experience, you should just by default be better. I'm not talking about any hypotheticals. You lose the locker room. Drake May could get hurt. There could be any number of things that happen. But just based in a vacuum, why would someone be better from year one to year two if it's the first time they've ever done anything? It's because they've become more experienced.
We're talking with Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. Tom, we know that Robert before the season said that he wasn't expecting a lot of wins this year. Do you think that this season has gone the way ownership expected it to, or is it worse than they thought, better than they thought, right around where they expected things to be at this point, 13 weeks into the season?
You know, I wish they would speak. So we knew. I really do. I mean, I'm on here because I've covered the team for a long time. My presumption is that it's gone somewhat like they expected it to in terms of results, somewhat like they expected it to in terms of the learning curve. But I would imagine that in practice, in reality, the conceptual, hey, we're going to have a tough time, we might struggle, the week-to-week reality of it and the parsing of, and the reasonable parsing of the things that the team does, says, and decides is hard to deal with. So it's gone worse on the defensive front, certainly. They're probably getting a real up-close look at how hard it is when you have an entire staff of first-year coaches who hadn't met each other. They're probably getting a pretty good look at the fact that if you really think about it, Alex Van Pelt might be their best coach. And he was an add-on that I think they were resistant to. Resistant is overstating it. Mm-hmm. I just think that they said, Elliot, who do you want? Van Pelt. Okay. Because they had background. So I think that they're looking at Elliot Wolf and saying, holy crap, he didn't draft anybody any good. So I guess probably worse. They would have a, we're not surprised at the wins, we're not surprised at the learning curve, but there are individual aspects of the team that we really have to address. And I hope that they have urgency. I've spoken about this too with you guys. You know, you can't just keep slow playing things. If it doesn't look the way it's supposed to, you're stuck in a spot where, is it going to get appreciably better? Or am I going to cut my losses here? And that's kind of where the Patriots have got to be in the next 18 months.
Tom, one question and answer that jumped out to me from your conversation with Gerard on the Patriots Talk podcast was you asked him about ownership's involvement with his coaching and what level that's at. And he said, to paraphrase, that they have a check-in about some of the decisions and the reasons behind them after his games. As somebody who's covered the team for a long time, as you said just a few moments ago, how did that strike you to know that there's this check-in with ownership after games?
I'm astonished that people think that's novel. I could not believe that people thought that the owner of the team having dialogue with the coach about decisions made during the game would be something that only Gerard Mayo around the league is doing. Everybody does it. Bill did it. Bill would have sit-downs constantly or at least I'm certain once a week with the Crafts, which probably led to the fact that they had kind of, I mean, watch the 2009 football life with Belichick and Kraft sitting across from prior to the Tennessee Titans game talking about snow and weather. You think that got better over the next 11 years, the high hat that that Belichick was giving Kraft as he tried to sit there? But there's going to be dialogue with the people who own the team on a constant basis. So I was surprised that people were surprised that they sit down. And I thought that, actually, I think there was a lot of taking that, hey, that's meddling. Why are they up his ass? And my thought is, don't you want that as a fan? Don't you want the first-year head coach having the people who are paying the bills and who do oversee it say, all right, what are you thinking there? How did you arrive at that conclusion? All right. Well, what would you do next time if you had more information? So that, to me, is what you would want with a first-year head coach. And I think it goes on all over the league all the time. It was funny because I saw Mike Florio in Pro Football Talk mention in a completely unrelated story to this one, mentioned the weekly debriefing with an owner in explaining some other situation around the league. It was just yesterday. And I said, this is okay. I'm not crazy. This does happen all around the league. It happened with Bill. It's happening with Mayo. I wasn't surprised.
Tom, you mentioned Bill, so I'm curious your thoughts on if you think there's any kind of realistic chance Bill wants to coach in the NCAA.
I don't think it would be a total ruse to just try and engender interest and say, wow, Bill really wants to coach. I look at it this way, Shime. Steve is at Washington. Bill O'Brien's at BC. Berge, Belichick's longtime assistant, Berge Najarian, is at BC along with Bill O'Brien. That's probably the person Bill is closest to on the planet, aside from his family. Nick Saban, Kirk Ferentz, you name it. He's got a lot of guys we could ask about, what do you think about going to college? And if they said, you know what, if you can be the capo, if you can be the guy completely in charge, it might not be a bad deal. Now, I can't see Bill driving through the backwoods of Mississippi to go sit down at a kitchen table to convince a five-star recruit to come, but and to deal with the transfer portal, and to deal with NIL, and to deal with some kid being sad because somebody said something mean to him on social media and he's in a complete funk. So I don't know what to make of it, but it's really interesting because there's a lot of people close to him who he trusts who may be pushing him in a direction to say, Bill, it ain't that bad.
All right, well, we'll leave it right there then. Tommy Kern, great to talk with you as always.
I know you got a break, but what did you guys think about it? Did you think about that at all too? Like, when you think about all the people he's close to who are now in the college game, it's kind of interesting. Does he want to create a fiefdom someplace?
No, I thought that guys like Saban would have talked him out of it.
Yeah,
that's what
exactly.
I was thinking. I thought all his college friends would have been like, Bill, you don't want any part of what NCAA football is these days. It's completely different. You don't want to be a part of it. It sucks. You're too old, even though he's, into the youth these days. But I think that's very much antithetical to everything that Bill Belichick has done over the last 20 years in New England.
But then again, the college game presents an opportunity to win the way Belichick likes to win, because in college you can still win by playing defense and running the football. Michigan did it last year, and Bill, I don't think, especially if he were to go to a place like UNC Chapel Hill,
right,
he would be able to get plenty of money to come into that for all the NIL purposes he could want. So to me, it's almost like if there was a time Belichick would succeed in college football, now would be the time.
I've always believed that he loves nothing more on this planet than teaching. He doesn't want to do the media as much. He doesn't want to talk to the media. He loves coaching and teaching. Parents were both teachers. His dad being a coach, his mother being a Spanish or French teacher for her entire life. But I think that's what he wants to do. And if he can do it at North Carolina and beat the hell out of, whatever other ACC schools he wants to on a regular basis because he's Bill and he can outcoach them, then maybe it is something he wants to do as he winds down instead of dealing with all the NFL BS.
Tom,
so much college BS.
How much do you think has to do with UNC itself? Like his connect? I just think about the way that he seems to view different institutions and athletes. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there's something with the East Coast. It's almost kind of like a public Ivy, UNC, like that whole thing around it. Not necessarily from a football perspective, but does seem like the kind of location you'd be interested in.
That's a great question. I don't know the campus and stuff enough. I mean, he was so close with Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, but I don't know if he would want to go to Duke and be the head coach. So it's a great observation. I mean, it's going to put him an hour and 15-minute flight from Jupiter, Florida. It's going to put him, you know, what, two and a half hour flight from here. So, yeah, it's a very completely, wholly unexpected, and that's why it was a great question by you guys, a wholly unexpected direction to have a turn. So I'm kind of trying to make sense of it too, and that's the best explanation I can give right now is the people who are closest to him in football in the most recent years, the O'Briens, the Berges, Steve Belichick, they seem like they might be digging it.
Yeah.
Maybe they've said to Bill, hey, you know what, try it. You might like it.
You might like it. You're not breaking Shula's record that way. And also, what does this say about his market, right? Like, I mean, he had to take an interview with UNC. It's not like they just say, yeah, Bill, you got the job no matter what. Thanks for blessing us with your presence here today. And does that maybe imply that he's put the feelers out in the NFL and there's not many bites?
Mike Lombardi, who I trust implicitly when he characterizes things regarding Bill, indicated that the power structure in the NFL may not be there. You guys can maybe find the tweet after I hang up and delve into it. But he believes that he could be more of a grand poobah down in college than he could be in the NFL because the layers and layers of executives, which is what he encountered, it seems, in Atlanta, which is what he would encounter, you know, virtually everywhere, because nobody wants to give the keys to a 72-year-old head coach who has floundered for the better part of a decade and a half in the personnel end of things and who's very difficult to deal with and doesn't deal with the media that great, period. So who wants to give that guy a blank check just because he's really good with his timeouts?
Tom, what are you going to see tonight if you go to the movies?
Yeah.
We were thinking either Gladiator or Red One.
Red One, is that Chris Evans Christmas movie?
Yeah, with The Rock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go Gladiator, Denzel.
Is it going to be 2.5 hours?
Probably. Everything's 2.5 hours in the theater.
Yeah, but
now.
2.5 hours of Gladiator crap. Like, that's all right.
Eh? All right. Slang.
Okay.
Slay queen. All right.
Very good. Tommy Kern, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thanks, Tom.
Love you guys. That was nice to have some extended play. Bye.
All right, right back at you there, pal. Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. We got the inactives. No Patriots inactive because there's no Patriots game. But we'll take you around the NFL, let you know who's playing, who isn't playing. We got more on this Bill Belichick situation as well. But first, here's Chris Schein with what's trending. Mike Lombardi. It's WEEI Afternoons. Bill Belichick, who I was told by many, many people was going to be right back in the NFL. Going to be a big market for him with NFL teams. We're going to be fighting over who's going to get to hire Bill Belichick here in this upcoming coaching cycle. And now it appears as though he may be headed to Durham, North Carolina to take over the UNC Tar Heels. There was a tweet Friday by a guy named Ollie Connolly. It was a stream of tweets. This guy writes for The Guardian. And he says, per sources, I'm told that Bill Belichick's negotiations with North Carolina, which, by the way, that was a big part of this because we just heard it was an interview, not negotiations. Negotiations are a step beyond an interview. But regardless, he said Belichick's negotiations with UNC include a guarantee that Stephen Belichick will be named the school's head coach in waiting. UNC is open to that guarantee. Discussions are not a bid to gain leverage for NFL offers, and BB is open to the move. Any potential staff would include Matt Patricia, obviously, Ben McDaniels, who is the brother of Josh McDaniels, which I didn't even know Josh McDaniels had a brother.
Neither did I.
He's the Texans passing game coordinator, as well as a sitting college GM who would handle general operations like NIL recruiting and so forth. Belichick's preference remains a return to the NFL, but the landscape is already considered thin based on feedback for the league. Moving to college with a guarantee for his son will overrule waiting on the NFL carousel. Some added context, Steve Belichick has already been approached about other college head coaching roles. He's taken the Washington Huskies defense from 28th in S&P Plus. What is S&P Plus?
I don't know.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know any some of these college stats are beyond my reach.
Isn't that the stock market?
Right, yeah, the yes, S&P 500.
Yes, correct.
It was 50th last year, and now it's 28th in S&P, whatever the hell that means.
In points per game, they went up almost, I think, like 3 points better than last year. So that, in easier terms.
Yeah, and Washington's defense has gotten better. They're still not great, but they have gotten better. I'm interested in the idea that Steve has been approached about other college head coaching roles.
Yeah.
What do we think about the idea that Bill Belichick has sort of given up on the idea of ever catching Shula and now wants to set up this succession plan at UNC or at some other college where he can ride off into the sunset and then set up his kids for however long they want to do it?
Well, go ahead, Chim.
No, well, so I think you kind of nailed it when we were talking to Curran. Like, to me, this screamed, oh, he knows there's not really a whole lot in the NFL.
Right.
And any opportunities he would get, he wouldn't get the full control like he wants. And so going to college, he can go to any college he wants and be like, yeah, I want full, except maybe like your, you know, Georgia's, Alabama's, and be like, yeah, give me full control and I will get us back to winning a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if he goes to UNC, he'll have them in the ACC championship game in like 2 years.
It makes me think of sometimes how when very successful people get older, they just don't want to compromise what they want.
Right.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It's interesting because when he was out of the Patriots job last year, we had a lot of conversations about, is he going to spend this offseason reflecting on whether he really needs to be in a position where he's running the front office and the personnel and everything? And then maybe he'll go and coach for the Cowboys with Jerry Jones, and he'll make that work long enough to get back into the playoffs with the team and to get the record. And that would make sense for him. But in a way, this feels, even though it's college and it doesn't make sense to me for Bill as a football coach and NFL guy, I do kind of see why he would want to go down there and be able to control everything, put his friends' family members, his own family members, and guarantees for the future. Like, that does feel more like how a lot of people go about things when they're very successful and they're older. Don't want to compromise. Just want to run everything exactly how you want to run it.
And when we saw him enter the media in the way that he did with all these different jobs, it's like, oh, he's trying to connect to the younger player.
Right.
Well, this is an even easier way to be like, hey, colleges, look, I can very much connect with the younger player. I have a personality. I just want to coach, and I want to help these kids get better and win you football games. And I think on top of that, I think he would love the idea of trying to join one of three coaches in history to win a national title and a Super Bowl. Like, it's literally only Pete Carroll, Barry Switzer, Jimmy Johnson. He would love to be in that group. And so I think...
You think he wants to be in that group more than he wants to be number one ahead of Shula in the all-time wins record?
Well,
I mean, that
well,
seems...
I bet he looks at Andy Reid and sees Patrick Mahomes and goes, well, he's only 50 games behind me. He just has to stick around, and Patrick Mahomes is going to get there in like 3 years or 4 years. So, I mean, what's it matter if I go break the record just for Andy Reid to break it again 2 years later? You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I just wonder, look, and Bill is obviously a historian and a football historian, so I'm sure those things matter a lot to him.
Lawrence Taylor went to UNC.
Exactly. I'm sure those things matter a lot to him. But I do think more heavily it's just kind of like the lifestyle and how he wants to operate in the job. And
yeah.
It just says to me more than anything that he's really interested in having full control.
Yeah, and you mentioned, too, the environment. It feels like Chapel Hill would be a Nantucket of the South.
Oh, it's waspy as hell.
Yeah.
Is it?
Bill loves the waspy
stuff.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
He absolutely does. And so,
thrives
trust me.
In it, really.
Like, have a conversation about prep school lacrosse around Maryland with him. Like, that is his world. He loved it.
I think
he loved that environment.
Somebody also texted in, like, Coach K still lives in the Durham area. I mean, Duke and UNC are, like, 10 minutes apart. And if he wants to go hang out with his buddy, Coach K, he can right there. No big deal.
He's got a bro down the street.
Oh, yeah.
They can go hit up the bars in Chapel Hill together.
Bro down real hard,
It's a great Halloween down there.
Him and Coach K.
Get after it.
Sure. Yeah, listen, I think that for all the talk about, and this happened right after he was fired, there's been a lot of, I think, resistance from Patriots fans and people who are around Belichick for the last 20 years, resistance to the idea that he can't just get any job he wants, that he can't just sort of walk into any NFL team with a coaching vacancy and say, hey, I'm Bill Belichick, you should hire me because look how great I am.
I think he could if he compromised some things.
He could, maybe, but I think even if he said he was going to compromise, I don't know, are owners going to believe him? Are they going to believe, yeah, he'll play nice with my GM, he'll play nice with my scouts and these people who may have different ideas about who to draft and whatever. And I don't know. I think there's too much of a history there. And it's been a pretty consistent history. I mean, Belichick, for better or for worse, has been pretty much the same guy for this entire time. So, you know, he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I think that there have been a lot of opportunities that he may have had if he was more willing to kind of play ball and be part of that club, and he just never really was. He always was on his own. He always kind of just said, I'm not really playing games with you people. I'm just here to win, and that's it, and that's all I care about. And I think there's a lot of politics and a lot of sort of old boys club stuff that goes on in the NFL that he just wasn't part of. I just think he did by choice, not because
he
was ostracized. I just think he didn't want to be. You know, I mean,
he just wanted to coach.
He was
like
a
Tom
maverick.
Said.
Kind of. I mean, he kind of was. Like, he's a football lifer, so it's not like he doesn't know these people.
No,
but he's not in with them the same way. You know, like it's with the owners and the Maras and the Rooneys and all these people. Like, it seems like there's a web that he could have very well and very easily joined if he wanted to, and probably risen to the top of by the time he got to this point in his career. But he just never ever did and never wanted
I'm
to.
I'm just thinking about him and Matt Patricia walking out in like baby blue seersucker suits. Oh,
love that color. UNC colors are great.
They are great.
Brothers and sisters of every coach, whoever, where they're all part of the staff too.
Drake May'd be thrilled for his alma mater.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he probably would be. Yeah, it's an interesting thought, and we'll see if it comes to fruition or not. It seems like, based on some of this reporting, that they're pretty far along in this process, and I would be very, very surprised if he made a decision about this before the NFL season even ended. You know, before Black Monday when the coaches get fired at the end of the season and all of that, I would be very surprised if he did that. But if this is the track that he's on, it's Bill Belichick.
It's come along fast, too. Yeah. Like, it was Mac Brown just got fired, last week when BC beat them?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this has come along very quickly.
Yeah, certainly has. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We have an actives, which we'll tell you about here in just a second. But first, let's go to Sorgia in Mansfield. Go ahead, Sorgia.
What's going on today, guys? How are we?
What's up, pal? How you doing?
First of all, really quick, before I get to my Mayo point, Arkan, I've been hearing you've been under the weather for the last couple of weeks. Are we doing good?
Much better. I had walking pneumonia, which I thought was just a persistent cold, and in fact, it was actually pneumonia, so glad to have gotten that cleared up. I was on all sorts of drugs last week, and am now feeling much, much better, Sorgia, so thank you for asking.
That's great to hear. Now, really quick here, I think with Mayo, the biggest thing I want to see is kind of a sense of urgency coming out of the bye week. Like, as a Patriots fan right now, it's, like, so difficult sometimes to, like, enjoy the game. Because sometimes you want to just look at the game and not even think about the Patriots. But, like, you know, you see that Lions-Packers game and some of the games today where you're, like, almost seeing it through the guise of the Patriots, if you will. And I just think that I'm not saying that Mayo deserves to get fired this first season, but I think the precedent is there. Like, the 49ers fired two coaches back-to-back in 2015 and 2016. The Texans obviously fired two coaches back-to-back in 2021 and 2022. So I think that Mayo should really kind of coach with some urgency the next 4 weeks. And if he wants to make a statement, right, if he can go 5-12 in his first season following Bill Belichick, that's going to be great for him. And really quick here, I think a lot of times – we always talk about the leashes with the coaches and how the coaches don't have a lot of leash. I think the reason for that being is that teams are able to turn around things so much quicker than in years past. So I think, and you also have the deadline where it's like with these quarterback contracts, you have to be able to make a decision within 3 to 5 years. Otherwise, you have the Daniel Jones situation where you're giving a guy over $200 million who can't throw the ball. So you guys have a great rest of your weekend now.
Yeah, you too, Sorgia. Thanks for the call. A lot of stuff in there, but yeah, I generally agree with what he had to say. In terms of Mayo and Kraft and that whole thing, there is something to be said for the idea that if Mayo had lost the locker room this year, or if there was like a revolt in the locker room, I don't know that Kraft's confidence in him would have saved him. Like, you remember Josh McDaniels in Vegas, like, that whole locker room was just so dead set against him that they basically went to the owner and they were like, I know it was the first year and I know you had big hopes for this guy, but we can't play for it. We just can't play for him. If that happened with Mayo, I think that would have resonated. I don't know that they would have put that ahead of the entire locker room, their faith in him and the trip to Israel and all that stuff. They would have been like, come on, this isn't working.
Yeah, there's only so many things you can overcome. I mean, look at Eberflus. That locker room wanted nothing to do with him, and so they canned him. And like that's just kind of what happens, because ultimately you have to be able to lead your players, and if you can no longer do that, and that was the whole reason they hired Gerard Mayo in the first place, it feels like, because they felt like he was such a good leader of men. So if he clearly was unable to do that one thing that they thought he was tremendous at, then that's when you have to resort yourself to just finally moving on.
Do you think they would ever try to get Steve Belichick back here?
No.
I mean, they need help defensively. His defense was
certainly... don't you? He's going to be the coach in waiting in North Carolina.
I'm thinking about where...
By the way, he shouldn't do that. Steve Belichick shouldn't do that. He shouldn't go to North Carolina. If other coaches were approaching him about head coaching jobs...
What's a better move for Steve Belichick? To come back to the Patriots and be the defensive coordinator and play caller under Gerard Mayo, who used to work alongside on the same level in that organization, or going and being the head coach in waiting behind his dad at UNC?
Can we open
the NFL job, I think, would be better. Yes.
Can we open door number three and be a head coach of like Montana State? I think that would be the best.
That would be better too. I think him getting another job.
I think it's a little foggier.
It's foggier. I'd go with the NFL job between those two that you just presented. But I think that in general, he should continue forging his own path here. For him to get a job in Washington and do well there, and then go right back under back to daddy's bosom, I just think is a stupid plan.
Unless he's complacent to do, like, if he's fine with doing that, if he doesn't really have, you know, the grandeur aspirations of being this great head football coach and just likes coaching football and it gives him a pretty good paycheck and he can hang out with his dad and stuff, like, if that's what he wants to do, then great. But, you know, it's kind of
lame.
It's lame. It is lame.
If I were the Crafts, I'd try to get Steve back. That's what I would do this offseason. I'd try to lure him back. I'd say, yeah, I know you didn't want to move in the first place across the country, and your wife and your kids want to be back here and the school's back here. Come back.
I would try a whole different defensive system. I would try and get somebody that has years of experience, that knows what the hell they're doing. Maybe it was a former head coach. I'd go get a guy like Matt Eberflus. It's like the perfect kind of guy. Head coaches that have completely flamed out, maybe even horribly so.
They've already got one. He's a McAdoo.
It's true.
But he's an offensive guy.
We've had this conversation. They need to bring in another offensive
experience.
Guy.
Like what Sean McVay did when he got hired by the Rams, they brought in Wade Phillips, multiple-time head coach, great defensive mind. He just took care of the defense, and boom. Good to go.
Yeah.
Like that's what you need. You need experience.
We also need someone who can run the offense, which they also don't have. So there you go.
You guys said Alex Van Pelt is improving.
He is. I stand by my statement.
He can continue improving.
617-779-7937. Quick, actives and inactives. This is from Rap Sheet. I haven't gone over every single team. These are the important ones. Alexander Mattison, Raiders running back, inactive.
Yep.
Also, Raheem Mostert, inactive. Bucky Irving playing for Tampa Bay. Yes. The Jets will not have Sauce Gardner today. Alan Lazard will be playing. And Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers, questionable this week. He is playing and active today as well. So there's your
got another big one for you. George Pickens, inactive for the Pittsburgh Steelers today against the Browns.
No Pickens.
No George Pickens.
That's a relief.
It's
bad news for Jacob and a relief for all of the defensive backs that he'd be going up against that he'd just be fighting all day long.
I'm pretty sure he was taking shots at the Cleveland defensive backs leading up to this game, so I am shocked he is not playing.
I'm surprised by that as well. All right, usually coming up, we'd be doing Coach Wiggy's keys, but since there's no game to have keys for, instead, we are going to find out whether Mego or Scheim knows more about this year's New England Patriots. We'll do that next. It's WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan, Mego, Scheim time here as well. And normally we'd be talking with Wiggy, getting the keys to the game. There's no game, so instead, here's what we're going to do. We are going to find out between Mego and Scheim who knows more about the 2024 New England Patriots with today's edition of Patriots Quiz.
Ooh.
Jacob back there. We'll have the hand on the buzzer. We have 10 questions and a tiebreaker. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Mego wants to go first.
Go for it.
I'm just going to get it over.
Please.
All right. We'll ask a question to Mego.
I'm a really bad auditory processor, so he's going to scream at me like twice during this.
Yes, that is probably going to have to happen. These are all pretty basic questions, pretty simple.
Oh, great.
I'm going to ask a question. You will give an answer. If you get it right, you get a point. If you lose, Scheim can steal, and then vice versa. We'll go back and forth until we ask all 10 of these questions.
Okay.
Question number one, Mego. This Patriots pass catcher leads the team in touchdown receptions with 3.
Ooh, with 3. Let's see. It's not going to be Jalen Polk because he actually has 2. It's not going to be DeMario Douglas because he only has 1. Why don't you say Austin Hooper?
Austin Hooper is correct.
Yes. Well done.
Well done, Mego. Mego's on the board.
three. That is not good.
No, it is not. It is very, very bad.
Not great.
A lot of these questions, the answers are kind of depressing, but here we go.
Okay.
Question number two. This one's for you, Shime. These two Patriots lead the team in sacks with 5 sacks each.
Okay, so Keon White, because he started the season hot and has since tapered off.
That is one.
The other one with 5 sacks, I will go with, Dietrich Wise.
Dietrich Wise and Keon White is correct.
Woo!
Both guys
Why
on the board.
Why am I cheering for Shime?
Mego and Shime, both Shime. On the board.
Great job, Mego.
All right, here we go. This one's a little bit tougher, Mego.
Okay.
Christian Gonzalez leads the Patriots with 2 interceptions.
Yes.
4 other Patriots have 1 interception each.
Oh,
name
God.
As many of those 4 players as you can.
Is Del Pettis?
Just name 4, and okay. I'll tell you how many you got. And then I'll
this
give it a shot.
This season?
Yep.
This season, yes.
Wow, I feel like there haven't been that many. Brennan Schooler? No.
Keep going.
Del
so Pettis Schooler are your 2.
Marcus Jones, I know, has
uh-huh.
one. Who else is out there that would get one?
Oh, I know. I got one.
Peppers?
Okay. Those right. are your 4?
Yeah.
So you said Pettis, Schooler, Jones, and Peppers. You got 2 correct.
Okay.
Shime, you want to take
Schooler
a stab at it?
Yeah, so one
ahead.
Of them is definitely Tavai. He has one.
Oh, right.
He had one. And then the other one, let's go with, was it? Let's go with Kyle Duggar.
Kyle Duggar is wrong. Give me your 4.
Okay. So Duggar, Peppers, and Marcus Jones, I know, had one. So the other 2 I would go with, let's see.
It's 4, so you only get one more guess. So there's your 4. Okay, so Shime gets that because he got 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The one you were both missing is Christian Ellis. Christian Ellis had an interception this year.
It was
off at deflection.
That would not have jumped out to you,
yeah,
to
me
be
either.
Honest.
But that's what happened, so there we go.
Shucks.
All right, question 4. This one is for Shime,
okay,
who currently leads 2-1.
All right.
Shime, who is the only Patriot not named Jacoby Brissett or Drake May to attempt a pass this season?
Ooh.
Attempt a pass? Oh, it was... the idiot who threw one across on the double reverse. Oh, God. Which one was it? It was one of the stupid receivers.
That's not nice.
I'll go. Oh, it's Kendrick Bourne.
Kendrick Bourne is correct.
I knew that
one. That is correct.
I hated that play.
Shime leads 3-1. Okay. Mego, this is for you.
Okay.
This opposing quarterback who threw for 295 yards and 4 touchdowns had the best passer rating against the Patriots in a game this season at 142.7.
Wow. Matthew Stafford.
Matthew Stafford is correct.
Well
Mago.
Done.
Thank you.
Nailed it. Well done. All right. You still trail, though, 3-2. Shime,
okay.
Question 6
mm-hmm.
for you. In that Rams game, Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp both eclipsed 100 yards receiving. What other pair of teammates did that against the Patriots this year?
Ooh. Okay. Pair of teammates. Was it Jonnu Smith and Jalen Waddle?
That is incorrect.
Damn it!
Mego can steal. What other pair of teammates eclipsed 100 yards receiving in a game against the Patriots
that
this year?
Probably would have been my guess, too. I'm trying to think if there was... Oh. Was it on the Jets?
It was not.
I was thinking that Thursday night game.
It was not.
No
okay.
hints, Mego. Come on.
No, okay. I'm like blacking out here. I'll just say Waddle and Hill.
Waddle and Hill is also incorrect.
Yeah.
We were looking for...
Was it the Titans?
DK Metcalf and Jackson Smith in Jigba.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah,
129 yards for Metcalf, 117 for Smith and Jigba. So no one gets the points there. Let's move on to question 7. This one is for Mego.
Okay.
Mego, the Patriots are on track to pick in the top 5 for the second year in a row.
Yay!
The last time they picked in the top 5 in back-to-back years was 1993 and 1994. When they selected these 2 players.
I thought this was about this year.
And 4th overall. It is sort of about this year because they're about to do it this year, too.
I know one of them.
These 2 players were selected 1st overall and 4th overall in 93 and 94. Name them.
I don't know. Bledsoe? I don't even have
Bledsoe's
the other.
One of them.
Yeah, what's
yeah
your
I
one?
Know that one. I don't know what the other one would be. I have no idea.
Mego gets a half a point if Shime
can't
get it. I
can't try to steal this.
4th overall.
I know it was the year he was drafted. I don't remember what round it was, but I'm going to go with Ty Law.
Ty Law is incorrect.
Damn it.
Mego get a half a point for this. We're looking for Willie McGinnis.
Ah,
Drafted fourth overall. That's a good jersey right there.
Yep.
And I'm going to do you both a favor and not tell him that you didn't get that right, because we see how he deals with people that cross him. It's not a
pretty. Tyle appreciate that. I thought it was him.
There you go. All right. Question number 8. This one for Shine.
This is a long quiz.
Head coach Gerard Mayo was drafted 10th overall by the Patriots in 2008. That same year, this player was drafted in the 5th round, who now serves as a special assistant to Mayo on his coaching staff.
In the 5th round. Oh, boy. Special assistant to Mayo. Oh, boy, this is a tough one. I don't know. I know it's T.C. McCartney.
T.C. McCartney is incorrect. Mago, back to you. Mayo drafted 10th in 08 that same year. This player was drafted in the 5th round. So he now is a special assistant to Mayo on his coaching staff.
I'm trying to think about on the staff. The only, like, special assistant I can think of was drafted well before that. So, and Dante Hightower is a linebacker's coach.
Also a first-round pick.
Yeah. I have no idea. I don't even know who's back there.
We are looking for Matthew Slater.
I forgot he was a coach now.
He is an assistant.
We don't know what he is.
Special assistant to Gerard Mayo.
Saw him in the locker room once.
He was drafted in the 5th round in 2008. All right, let's see. We are back on Mego this time. Mego, this former Patriots pass rusher's 8 sacks is good for 13th in the NFL, ahead of names like Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons, and Max Crosby. What former Patriots rusher am I talking about?
Josh
Uche is incorrect.
Van Noy.
Kyle Van Noy. Wow. Shime got
Honestly, I forget he's still playing until I see the Ravens on Monday Night Football on the Manning cast. And then they bring up Van Noy, and then Bill talks about Van Noy for like 20 minutes.
Yes, he does. And I was surprised to see him ahead of all those names, but there we are. All right, Shime's basically got this thing sewed up.
Lock it up.
Bummer.
4 to 2.5. We'll ask this last question just because. Shime, you should get this, being your Drake May's number one super fan.
Let's hear it.
What is Drake May's middle name?
Oh, this is something I don't know.
Oh, super fan my ass.
I don't tend to learn middle names. I will go with Drake Charles May.
Drake Charles May, while aesthetically pleasing to hear, is not his name. That is not what it is. Mago, do you know?
I'm trying to remember what his dad's name is.
I can give a hint. It's the most popular last name in the world.
What?
The most popular last name in the world?
I think that's right, yeah.
Is it Mohammed?
Yes. Drake Mohammed May is exactly right, yes.
The most popular last name in the world.
Shout out to Superbad.
Oh my gosh. Smith?
Smith is incorrect. We were looking for Lee. Drake Lee May. Three syllables, three names. And that is it. So there you go. Shime takes this one with a four answers correct. Mega with 2.5. Trivia champion.
Great competition.
That was a good competition.
You guys, you left it all out on the field there. It's all you can ask. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got still a lot to get to here over the course of the final hour here. It is WEEI Football Sundays. We got storylines from the bye week to get to. Andy Hart will join the show at 12:30. And, of course, we'll do our pop, lock, and drop like we always do at 12:45. That's all coming up in the final hour of WEEI Football Sunday.